Welcome to the audio accompaniment to the Andover Heritage Trail. As you follow the trail, listen to the stories and information about the rich and varied history of the town. Andover as you see it today is a picturesque market town with many elegant buildings and facades, dominated by the Guildhall and prominent hilltop church of St Mary's. The town sits on the Harrow Way, a prehistoric trackway and the crossing point of two important Roman roads. Andover's archaeological finds date back at least to the Iron Age, however it was the Celts who gave the town its name. A royal vill or hunting lodge was set up at Andover by the Saxon kings to service their needs and their entourage, and it was soon necessary for the small community to grow, bringing traders and merchants to the area. The town grew fast, and it was likely under this royal patronage that the Great Fair at Weyhill began. In 1139, civil unrest broke out in all parts of the kingdom after King Stephen's claim to the throne was challenged by the previous king's daughter Matilda. Her forces took refuge in Winchester, where she was besieged and forced to flee first to Werwell Abbey, then to Andover and on to Luggershaw, where she escaped. During the melee, the town of Andover was set on fire by Stephen's army and the parish church was burnt down. After the war, the church was rebuilt in stone, and its dedication changed from St. Peter to St. Mary. The town has a long history associated with royalty, and the merchants were granted its first charter in 1175 by King Henry II. The main business of the town was wool weaving, and the area was renowned for the rearing of sheep. Throughout its history, Andover has been situated on important lines of communication. During the railway age, there were stations on north, south and east, west lines, and the remaining historic buildings around the town bear witness to the prosperous times of the 18th century, when Andover was an important stopover destination for stagecoaches on their way to and from London, Southampton, Oxford and onto the West Country. All this activity inevitably attracted the occasional highwayman, one of which was Tom King, later a collaborator of Dick Turpin, who holed up at the Peacock, an alehouse on the common acre of Andover, whilst he was working this area. A planning agreement signed in 1961 with the London County Council more than doubled the town's population and brought many new firms to the industrial estates. The town centre trail begins at the town mills. After the Norman invasion, William I instigated a nationwide survey in 1086, which was later named the Domesday Survey, in an effort to find out how much each landowner held. The town was said to be held by the king, and it stated there were 6 mills, of which only 4 can be verified today with any certainty. The town mills were used for grinding wheat and malting, but its main trade during the Middle Ages was the fulling of the woolen cloths produced by the weavers in the town. After this process, the cloths were hung out to dry on tenter frames or racks. Rack Close is the only surviving road name that can be associated with the trade. Rebuilt by local wheelwright John Gibbs in 1764, the mill finally ground to a halt in the 1960s. Nowadays, the mill serves as a public house, and a replica of the mill wheel can be seen at its entrance. As you walk towards Bridge Street, past the flower display featuring a longboat, we are reminded about the time when the Vikings were attacking the country. In the winter of AD 993, they set up a base on the south coast near Southampton. They sailed their longboats as far as Longstock on the River Test, where they built a harbour or dock. In the spring of 994, whilst King Ethelred was holding a council in the town, it was reported to him that the Viking leader Olaf Tryggvason was in the south plundering and attacking, and so he sent the Bishop of Winchester to Olaf and request that he meet with the king in Andover. After some negotiation, Olaf agreed to leave the country and not return, providing the king paid a Danegeld of £16,000 in silver coinage. Now walk straight ahead onto the town bridge. This was the point in Andover from where the mileages were measured by the turnpike trusts for the toll road milestones. Look back toward the town mill, and imagine yourself back in the 18th and 19th century, when the coaches which entered the inns and hostelries on the west side of Andover High Street exited through the back into the town river and splashed their way to emerge next to the bridge to continue their journeys. Now look to your right. Near the Sainsbury's roundabout was the canal basin and the terminus of the Andover Redbridge Canal. It was built to service the needs of the farmers and landowners in the north of Hampshire, enabling them to easily move wheat and other produce down to the docks at Southampton. Unfortunately, it was never a great success, and the railway companies purchased it in 1859 and built the Andover to Southampton railway line, known locally as the Spratt and Winkle. This was one of the lines closed under the Beeching Plan in 1964, but subsequently it has re-emerged as part of the beautiful 44-mile-long Testway Walk. The Catherine Wheel Inn stood nearby, with the old town jail behind the present buildings alongside the town river. As we stroll toward the High Street, note the White Hart Inn on your left, which was an important coaching inn and has remained a hostelry since 1636. Now pause the audio as you walk to the bottom of the High Street. Standing at the bottom of Andover High Street, take a few moments to look up at the wide High Street with the beautiful Georgian Guildhall and the Star and Garter Hotel on your immediate right. The tower of the parish church of St Mary's can be seen in the distance. With just a few changes, this view is pretty much how the High Street has looked since the 18th century. Just before we enter the High Street, take a couple of minutes to take a detour into London Street. Here you will see the site of the former Andover Bank of Messrs Heath and Company, a Quaker family who unusually made their money by supplying beer to the local troops. One feature of the Heaths' homes and working premises was a sundial. The one on the old bank building shows the local time used by the coaching fraternity and shows Andover time 6 minutes behind London time. When the railways arrived in the town in 1856, Andover time was standardised on London time. Now pause the audio as you walk back to the High Street. Andover was considered an important coaching centre. In 1601, Queen Elizabeth's Privy Council provided financial assistance to the town for provisioning horses for the Royal Mail. Andover was now an important centre on the route from London to the West Country, and a place where the horses were changed over for the important passenger and mail coaches. There were many inns and taverns in the High Street at this time, but the most important inns were the Angel at the top of the High Street, the George off to the right, and the Star and Garter Hotel on the right-hand side. The Star and Garter was once the largest building in the High Street, as it was the town's post office, and its innkeeper was also the town's postmaster. A model of a postboy stood outside, showing people where the office was. This stylish hostelry has hosted many famous people, including royalty. Charles I stayed there in 1644 after the Battle of Andover, and George III often broke his journey down to his favourite resort at Weymouth by staying the night. Other visitors included Lord Nelson and Lady Hamilton, who also brought her mother along for good measure. Another distinguished guest was the famous General Tom Thumb from Barnum and Bailey's Circus. He arrived in Andover in his own miniature coach, drawn by miniature ponies and a footman, and the same night gave a banquet at Andover Guildhall. The George Inn is also one of the oldest inns in the High Street. In 1768, a dinner was organised by a solicitor in the town who was campaigning for the election of Sir Francis Delaval as MP. The solicitor invited the mayor and corporation and the colonel and officers of a military unit billeted in the town. Each party was led to believe they were the guests of the other, but when it came time for the bill, the solicitor's mannerism gave him away. The colonel grabbed the practical joker and threw him clean through the tavern window, breaking the election agent's leg. The solicitor attempted to sue the colonel for £500 for medical expenses, but whether he was ever paid, we may never know. By 1175, the merchants in Andover formed themselves into a guild and requested the king grant them the same status as the towns of Winchester and Salisbury. The guild's morning meetings became the town's earliest form of self-government. Over the years that followed, various charters were granted, confirming the guild as the town's governing body. Records exist in 1470 of a guild hall on two levels, with an upper meeting room and shops below. But by 1513, substantial repairs were needed. By 1583, there was a new townhouse or guild hall, but during the English Civil War, this was substantially damaged by troops billeted there, and by 1725 needed rebuilding. A new guild hall was built, designed by Thomas Switzer, and was an imposing building of brick and chilmark stone. It was throughout its life a heavy drain on the town's finances, due to high maintenance costs, and it lasted just 100 years until the current building, made from Bath stone, was built. When first constructed, the ground floor had an open plan format. What are now windows and doorways were merely arched openings, giving access to shops and market stalls. The shops were known as the Shambles due to the prevalence of butcher's shops there. The Upper Guildhall was used on a Friday as a corn exchange, and the forecourt of the Guildhall as a trading area. Over the years, the Guildhall has been the Assizes Court and Magistrates Court, as well as being the centre of the town's government. Take a look at the Andover Time Ring, which celebrates the area's rich heritage and was designed by Scottish-born artist Alan Potter, who specialises in art for public places. The time ring comprises of 10 mosaic panels illustrating events from history, set out in a clock face pattern. At the centre of the time ring is Andover Museum's Face of the Iron Age, an ancient presence which is everywhere around. Now take a walk around the time ring and feel the history and the development of the town. It begins with the Roman period, when there was a township at the crossing of two Roman roads at East Anton, the Icknield Way and the Port Way. The second panel depicts AD 1994, when the Viking Olaf Tryggvason was confirmed in Andover. This is followed by a depiction of Andover's first royal charter of 18th of April 1201, granted to the town's merchants, and its confirmation again in 1205 by King John. The next panel shows the Great Weyhill Sheep Fair, the greatest fair in the kingdom according to the Atlas Magna Britannia in 1720. The fair's earliest written evidence is marked by a sale particular for sheep, purchased at Weyhill in 1225. Sheep, hops and much else besides were traded here. Thousands of people, rich and poor from across the entire country, came to meet and see the sights. This is followed by the Great Fire of Andover in 1435, when the greater part of the upper town was lost to fire and some 81 families lost their homes. The medieval town was at that time centred on the Upper High Street, Marlborough Street and Newbury Street, but after the fire the centre was moved down to the Lower High Street. It is likely that St Mary's Church was the main building surviving after the fire. Andover was gradually rebuilt, with a large and impressive market area and a guild hall. Wool weaving was still the mainstay of the town, and over time became more prosperous. The next panel depicts the legendary cockatrice, a creature with the body of a wyvern, a legendary winged creature, and the head of a cockerel, which is reputed to have lurked in the cellars of Werwell Abbey. The final panel shows the time in 1644, during the English Civil War, when a running battle was fought through Andover, with the Roundheads being roundly beaten and fleeing. The king slept the night at the Star Inn, now known as the Star and Garter Hotel. By 1780, the Turnpike Trusts had greatly improved the state of the roads, and Andover was an important staging town on the road from London to the West Country. Andover was always busy, with coaches and stage wagons, carters and carriers setting out and arriving long before daybreak. More than 30 stagecoaches called at Andover daily, including the Devonport Quicksilver, the Exeter Balloon, the Oxford Caravan, the Weymouth Magnet, the Defiance, the Frome Fly, and of course the mail coach from 1784 onwards. In 1846, the Andover workhouse scandal hit the national headlines with tales of starvation of the inmates. To survive, they were eating the rotting meat from the bones of carcasses sent to the workhouse for them to mill and turn into fertiliser for the farmers. The ill treatment of the poor and the greed of the master stirred the nation and the members of Parliament into taking action. The last panel depicts the ingenuity of Robert Tasker of Anna Valley, a journeyman blacksmith who set up a foundry and began manufacture of farming machinery, effectively bringing the Industrial Revolution to Andover. The business developed and Tasker's built stationary and traction engines along with carts, trailers and even a steam lorry. Now pause the audio as you walk up the high street to the Angel Inn. The Angel Inn was for many years the town's largest and most prominent inn. It started life probably in the 1200s as the College Inn, as it was owned by Winchester College. It was burnt to the ground in the Great Fire of Andover, and remained void ground until 10 years later in 1445, when it re-emerged as the Angel Inn. All building records still exist and can be seen at the Hampshire Records Office in Winchester. In 1825, whilst the present Guildhall was being built, the large front room now used as the public bar was used temporarily as a Guildhall whilst the new hall was being built lower down the street. Council meetings, assemblies, magistrates and coroner's courts were all held there during this time. Now cross the road to the Norman Arch. The Norman Arch in the High Street is the only surviving item from the Andover Church built after the fire of 1141, and its passage acts today as a gateway into what is now the town's Garden of Remembrance. As you reach the top of the steps, spare a moment for the fighting men named on the memorial. Some fought through the First World War and stayed with the British Army in Russia until 1920, two long extra years. Later, more of our brave men left the town to fight in the Second World War, never to return. The gardens were built in 1956 to accommodate the town's war memorial and provide sufficient space for the annual remembrance service. From this vantage point, take a moment to look around the majestic St. Mary's Church. Stay a while at your leisure and wander around both inside and out. At the top of the High Street are Chantry Street and Marlborough Street. This area at the top of the High Street, near to the church, was the very centre of the early medieval town and the area where the street market was held, which extended in those days into what is now Newbury Street. Take a look down into Chantry Street at two of the oldest houses in Andover. Their jetted style was common after the rebuild in the 15th century, before more sophisticated brickwork came into use. Take a short walk down Marlborough Street to admire the almshouses on the right, and a little further on, the site of the old Anton Laundry and Tannery buildings, which later became a brewery and soft drinks factory. Now pause the audio as you take a walk to Andover Museum. The buildings were once the home of the Andover Grammar School, a foundation set up in 1571 when John Hanson, a member of the Andover Guild, left the sum of £200 to set up a free school in the town. The building where you enter the museum was once the headmaster's house and dates from 1741. It was owned in 1800 by Captain Henry Festing, a friend of Admiral Lord Nelson, and was also visited by Jane Austen, who commented on the staircase. Step inside the Museum of the Iron Age, which tells the story of Danebury Hill Fort. Discover what life was like for our prehistoric ancestors who farmed, fought, worshipped and died in Wessex over 2,000 years ago. The hill fort was excavated by Professor Barry Cunliffe between 1969 and 1988 and is one of the best studied sites of the British Iron Age. Your trail ends here. We have given you a brief glimpse of Andover from the past, but this is also the Andover of now and the future, a town with a growing economy and thriving businesses in the forefront of technology and innovation. The High Street is no longer the greater thoroughfare, as you can take the dual carriageway today, but Andover Town Centre still contains a rich heritage. Take advantage of all it has to offer and discover more of the history, the people and the events that made this place what it is today.